Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Three children, ages 10 to 13, had been uprooted from their home. For 10 years, they had been shunted from one foster home to another until finally that option had run out. A dedicated social worker tried in vain to find a family member to step up and take on this important task. No one came forward. Finally, a woman who was a family friend agreed to adopt the children. Relief all around. Then, just before the final papers were to be signed, a death in her family forced the woman to take over and raise other children, so the adoption fell through. Suddenly, a single man volunteered to take the children. The paperwork began again. And then, cruelly, the three youngsters were in a car accident. One suffered a broken leg, one with more serious injuries, and one on life support. Their new adoptive father stationed himself at the hospital to be with the children. Miraculously, all three were finally released, with one remarking, "I love you, Dad. Thank you for being there for me." From a parent's perspective, what can we learn about adopting hard-to-place children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is the founder and executive director of Adoptions Together. Janice Goldwater founded Adoptions Together, a Maryland, D.C., and Virginia licensed child placement agency, to reach out to those traditionally underserved by the private sector. The agency provides adoption permanency opportunities and support to all children in need, regardless of age, race, health, or handicapping condition, and strengthens families through educational programs and mental health services. Since 1990, more than 4,000 are now in permanent, stable families, and thousands more have benefited by the therapeutic and support services offered by the agency. Janice is a mother by birth and adoption to four children who range in age from 19 to 28. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Janice.
Thank you so much. It's truly a blessing to be here today.
What's the biggest myth about adoptions of hard-to-place children?
You know, I'm curious whenever we use that term, hard-to-place children, because I like to think about it as not yet found parents. Often we look at the children and we classify them and look at them like they've done something wrong, they're hard to place. Mm. Our job as professionals is to get the word out to the community that we need parents. And so I like to look at them as kids who we've yet to find parents for.
And what makes these children qualify in that specific kind of labeling?
Any child who needs permanency, needs a family to be committed to them for a lifetime, you know, needs a family who will not only be with them as they navigate elementary, middle, high school, college, the workforce, needs grandparents for their child, for their own children when they grow up, who yet doesn't have that, could be considered a child who we've not yet found parents for. Across the United States, there's about 110,000 children sitting in foster care in need of families of their own. And one of the problems is that people just don't know about it. People don't know that there are these children out there who desperately need families to commit to them for a lifetime.
Are there certain kinds of children that pretty easily, pretty quickly, you can tell that they're going to be children that it's going to be more difficult to find committed parents to take care of them?
Statistically, the older the child is, the more difficult it's been in the child welfare community to identify parents. Many people, when they think about adoption, they think babies. You know, they just think babies. They don't think about adopting a teenager. They don't think about adopting someone who's about to graduate high school. Across the country, the majority of children who are waiting are over the age of 10. Many are members of sibling groups. I mean, like the story that you told about that fabulous family with two little boys and a girl, that's a sibling group of three. And we have, you know, sibling groups that go up to 8 and 9 children that need a family of their own. And so often sibling groups are a little more challenging to find parents for, and older kids. And then, of course, kids that have diagnosed special needs, often families are a little bit less anxious to step forward for those kids.
Is the general belief among agencies for adoption that sibling groups should be together?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Whenever possible, it's better for children to maintain connections. You know, one of the things that's really tragic when children are unable to be raised in their first families, because these children that we're talking about are children that have been removed from their first families because of abuse or neglect, and their first families have been given the opportunity to get help and have not, for whatever reason, been able to organize themselves in a way that's been, that, where they've been able to show the court that they're able to raise their children in a safe and responsible way. So all of these kids have had that first rejection and that first loss. To then lose their siblings is really tragic. And so as much as possible, we try to keep children together.
What are the most important qualities you're looking for in prospective adoptive parents?
We're looking for flexibility. We're looking for openness. We're looking for people who can experience compassion, for people who are always interested in learning, who know that there's not just one correct way to do things. You know, parenting a child that has been hurt takes a different skill set than it does parenting a child that's never been hurt by the adults who care for them. So we're looking for parents who are open, who have support systems in their lives. We look for single parents. We look for married couples. We look for committed couples. We have all sorts of family constellations that provide excellent families for children.
Are there certain minefields or red flags or something that prospective adoptive parents should be aware of going in?
Yes. I think probably the biggest red flag that an adoptive parent should have is if they're working with a provider that says, all you need to do is love him and he'll be fine. Mm-hmm. All you need to do is love him, because love is not enough to help a child who's learned that adults are not safe be successful in a family system. So there are, I remember when my husband and I were adopting our own child, and we were adopting an older child, we had a social worker that said, you know, this one of the children we were looking at, you know, she's had a lot of hard times. In fact, she's had 10 difficult years, but all she needs is parents to love her. And I thought, wow, you haven't done your homework. And that's how parents are set up. And when we look at tragic stories like the woman from Tennessee who sent her child back on the airplane to Russia, that was a really good example of somebody who probably was not prepared beforehand, had no idea what she was getting herself into, and then did not access support services. So not only should parents be sure that they're working with professionals who will prepare them beforehand, but then have support afterwards.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on adoption of hard-to-place children.
The popular book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Janice Goldwater of Adoptions Together about adoptions of hard-to-place children.
Would you elaborate a little bit on the therapeutic and support services that Adoptions Together offers?
Certainly. At Adoptions Together, we believe that the placement of a child is just the beginning of a lifetime of experiences, and that parents need to have information. So we have educational programs. We have webinars through our website at adoptionstogether.org. We have lots of different webinars that parents across the country can participate in. In fact, we get people from around the world. We have therapy services where families come in together and we teach the parents the skills and the tools to deal with the special challenges that their children may present. We take a very family-centered approach to the work that we do. We train professionals. We have a program where we work with professionals who are interested, therapists who are interested in more effectively serving their own clients. So we're very interested in attachment and trauma and how across the developmental span of a child's development, trauma affects their ability to be in relationship. So we speak quite often around the country at conferences, and people do bring us in as experts. We speak locally. We provide support groups and all sorts of educational programs in addition to the specific therapeutic services.
Specific therapeutic services, does that mean if there's a child that needs to be seen privately by a therapist, that also happens?
Absolutely. We have a team of therapists at Adoptions Together who provide therapy for families.
Tell us a little bit more about the organization. How, for example, do you prepare children who have been in a foster care setting or sometimes more than one of those settings? How do you prepare them for prospective adoption?
You know, that's such a good question, because for children who have had multiple disappointments, and many of these children have had many different homes, and some of these children have been told you're going to be adopted by this family. Some have been adopted already by a family. And now we say, we have the family for you. We were just kidding all those other times that we told you this was going to be permanent. They're not stupid. My goodness, they learn when they're babies and they cry and nobody picks them up. They learn when they're toddlers and they're, you know, physically abused in response to their needs, that adults are not safe. So that's a really big job. What we have to do is we have to work with the children. We have to acknowledge and embrace their feelings. We have to take it slowly. We have to let them get to know the family beforehand. And we have to take it in baby steps. Some children don't want to be adopted because they have loyalty issues to their first family. Some children are afraid, if I get adopted, we have a lot of teenagers who are working on getting into permanent families, and they fear that they're going to have to change their name, that they'll never have contact with their first family again. There's a lot of myths out there that when we have to find out what it is that's troubling the child and address each one of those concerns. We can't just take a child and say, okay, here's your new family. And I mean, we can, but it decreases the chances of success significantly.
What are the chances of success in organizations that aren't quite as tuned in as yours? In other words, like sort of generally, when kids are adopted, how many adoptions end up failing and how many adoptions end up being okay?
I think the national statistic of older children is about 15%. Don't make it. And with babies, it's less than 1%. Today, we know that families need support. Today, we know that that it's our job and the job of all of the child-serving community to embrace these families, to support these families, and that significantly increases their chance of success.
Are there ways that adoptive families get together and get to know each other?
Absolutely. There's a group called ATTACH, the Association for the Training and Treatment of Attachment in Children. It's attach.org that has a fabulous online parent support group, an annual conference, and brings together both parents and professionals who are interested in helping these children thrive. And there's just tremendous support between parents. There's also the Northern American Council on Adoptable Children, NACAC, NACAC.org. That's a national, it's actually a Northern American organization that has all sorts of support programs set up in communities to support families. So there's cyber support, you know, through the internet,
sure.
Lots of support groups. There's also within communities, there's support groups. So, and like at Adoptions Together, we have a support group. We call it a super parent support group.
I would think that the adopted kids, not babies and toddlers, but as they get into their tweens and teens, need other adopted
totally.
Kids as friends.
Absolutely. And that is something that it's very important that none of us want to feel different. And if we're the only child that we know that was adopted, as we go through, the little guys, up until about the age of 5, they think it's totally fabulous, because they were adopted. And I can remember my son, because I run an adoption agency, adoption was just a big piece of my children's lives. And my third child was about 3 months when I started the agency. And so when he was 6 years old, he said, "Mommy, I have to ask you something." And I said, "What's that, sweetheart?" And he said, "How come you never adopted me?" And I said, "Well, we didn't need to adopt you because you were born into this family and we were able to care for you." Because he had seen so many babies be adopted. In the early days, I did a lot out of my house and it was very grassroots kind of effort. Today we have 4 offices and, a huge staff, but he didn't understand. And for a lot of children, when they're little, they think that everybody was adopted. And it's pretty fabulous. But then when they hit latency age, they begin to realize, well, wait a minute. Like, if I'm not with the woman I was born to, what happened? Why didn't she keep me? And they begin to think about the loss issues associated with adoption. And it's so important for children to see other families that have shared those same kinds of experiences. And it's really a lifetime of questioning for a lot of kids. Why was I not able to be raised with my birth family? Why did he choose vodka over me? Why did she choose those men over me? Why did my siblings get to stay and I didn't? So there's a lot of questions that children have. And the more they can be around other kids that it's sort of normal, the better off they are.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on adoption of hard-to-place children. Parents' Perspective needs you, your feedback, your opinions, and not least, your donations that help with the cost of producing this award-winning program.
Visit us online at www.parentsperspective.org and click on to Give Direct, I Give, or eBay at Mission Fish. Please help us continue to help you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Janice Goldwater of Adoptions Together. I have a niece and nephew who are both adopted. They're 19 and 20 years old now. And recently, within the last year, they had the opportunity to meet a half-sister who had the same birth mother. And so my niece is now in an apartment of her own, and the half-sister wanted to come and visit her, and she did. Well, after she left, my niece said to her mother, my sister-in-law, blood is not all it's cracked up to be. Family is more than blood. It was really interesting.
That's
very
interesting.
Reassuring to the family.
That's right. And, many adoptive families fear birth families. And I think that's another myth that's out there. We cannot replace the millions of hours we spend as parents nurturing and loving and being by our child's side with genetics. Genetics absolutely matter. And the more we are open to letting our child know all parts of their life, all parts of their history, all parts of their lives, the fuller a human being our child is going to be and the healthier they're going to be. And I know many adult adoptees who meet their birth family and some say, "Oh, thank goodness I was adopted." Some say, "Wow, I'm so happy to have had the chance to meet her, him, siblings, whoever. My life is so much richer and I know who my parents are, the ones that raised me."
What surprises have you experienced in your work? Obviously, there's been a lot of stories and a lot of excitement, but are there some surprises that you came across?
There's been a lot of surprises. I think the biggest surprise is the importance of attitude. I'm somebody who believes that family matters. I'm somebody who believes that it's the connections that we have as human beings that allow us to thrive and be successful. And the number of professionals who have sort of given up on children has been really surprising. The attitudes that older children don't need permanent families. You know, we have something in our child welfare system called independent living, or it's called APLA, another plan living arrangement. You know, she doesn't need to be adopted. She doesn't need to go back to her birth family. She can just go through institutional living till she's 18 or 21 and then be set free to live on her own. We have thousands of children that go through our child welfare system and come out on the other end. And the number of child welfare professionals who, for the last 15, 20 years, have thought that was acceptable is really surprising to me. And it's really inspiring to me now that there's a national movement to get these kids into families. So we have two fabulous programs, one in Washington, D.C., and one in Baltimore City, where we're working with these older youth to try to find permanent connections for them, to try to find them. Some are going into guardianship. Some are getting adopted. Some are just having adults step up to say, I will be there for you. You know, we have 20, 21-year-olds who, you know, are about to leave the system and go nowhere, go to a shelter. I mean, they have nowhere to go and no family. And I know my older kids, we're actively involved in each other's lives. It doesn't end. I mean, I talked to my dad last night. You know, I'm in my 50s. You know, family matters. And so the surprise is that there are resources for these families. And anybody who's listening who has room in your family, step up. Look at the AdoptUSKids.org. There's a listing of children across the United States who are looking for parents. And there's tremendous resources out there.
It's interesting what you say about the importance of the connections. I can't imagine. Our children are older than your children. Sandy's and my children are older than yours. And we're very connected to them. And they're married. Some of them are married and they have children. And I mean, we want to be connected to those lives. I can't imagine launching a young person out into the world with no ties at all, no one to turn to.
And when we look at our homeless population, the percentage of the homeless population that came out of foster care is startling.
Is there a limit on age of prospective adoptive parent? There used to be some kind of age limitation. You can't be older than this. You can't be younger than this.
Usually with infants, you know, many people like no more than 45 years difference between parents and children. With older kids, it's we like there to be, you know, at least 25 years difference between the age of the parent and the age of the child. But it's really flexible. We have to look at each individual situation. And we don't want a 22-year-old adopting a 19-year-old.
If people were, for example, in their grandparenting years,
feeling
like maybe they could take on an older
adoptee. We have a number of parents in their 60s who come forth and adopt the older teens who have raised children and have room for one more and realize that, you know, they have lots of maternal or paternal energy that's still in their brewing and they want to bring on a child. You know, another interesting population is, you know, we have a lot of parents in the gay and lesbian community who have come forward to adopt, and particularly older couples who never thought parenting was an option. Mm. And now, you know, they've gotten into their 50s and realized and you know, society has stopped discriminating in the way that it's historically been so painful. And they're coming forth and stepping up and adopting some of the older kids. So it's completely fabulous. The most important message that I would like to share with the community is that children are out there. They need parents. Think about it, talk about it, study it, and take action.
What resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to learn more about some of the issues we've been discussing? You've named a few. Why don't you reiterate a little
bit? Well, first, our Adoptions Together website, which is adoptionstogether.org. Second would be ATTACH, and that is ATTACH.org. Another good resource that looks at research and some of the national issues is the Evan B. Donaldson Adoption Institute, and their website is adoptioninstitute.org. An additional resource specifically for the gay and lesbian community is through the Human Rights Campaign. That's hrc.org. There's a project called All Children, All Families that has a listing of organizations around the country that are culturally competent and welcoming to the gay and lesbian community.
These are obviously very impressive resources, but you are also an impressive resource. So, Janice Goldwater, thank you so much for being with us today and helping us to learn a little bit more about how children who have heretofore not found families can now perhaps find families.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have been with you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of The Little Book, a collection of stories and articles, parenting tips and resources for all parents and caregivers, especially those who love and care for children and teens with special needs. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. With your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. Mention show number 489 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Evelyn Sachs Trust. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.